Going to be at the Hilton, Del Rio, July 11th through the 14th. And that'll be a big time. We can go down there and get indigestion and everything on the river. And we'll do it. For those of us who have gotten smart, we take Digel before we eat now, instead of after. It's a great time. We'll have a great time there. Almost as good as we had here. Not quite, because Fort Worth's a little different, you know. Now, I think they're going to have that down somewhere in New Orleans. Did you notice that we're the kind of people that never try to change anything? They'll find that out about June, John. Then they'll have to change it all. Now I'm going to try it again, okay? And if I don't, you know how I am, if I don't get it the third time, I just quit. Pretty girl going to be up here in a minute. I like us because we didn't look like we ever drank anything. After we're here a little while, and God just moves in and lets us look like we're supposed to. I don't know how that works. But here she is, Mary B. from Richardson, Texas.
Good morning. My name is Mary, and I'm a grateful alcoholic.
Hi.
I have been sober by the grace of God in this program and the many people who've helped me to understand it since August the 29th, 1972, and it's been a wonderful gift. I would like to start this, well, I guess we just really call it a meeting, with a moment of silent meditation followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. It really is a very deep privilege for me this morning to introduce Holly. I met her yesterday, but between alcoholic women, sometimes there is that immediate union of spirit, where it's like we've known each other before and we know each other without even trying. It was a gift to be with her yesterday, and she is going to be a gift to you this morning. Holly.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Holly, and I'm an alcoholic. From the moment I stepped off of the plane up until this present moment, I was having one hell of a good time until this minute. Not so hot right now. But I want to thank you for inviting me here. You are certainly super people. Your hospitality is outstanding. This I must say. You are lovely people. Every time I am with a group of my people, I think of this one particular story, among other stories. It was about a man that was in our fellowship, and he had a lot of tolerance. And someone was constantly, he had one friend in particular, that simply liked to stick it in and break it off. He was constantly on his back. He'd start in on him about his family. Man would take that. He'd tell him his family wasn't any good, his dog wasn't any good, his cat wasn't any good. He talked about him. Man would take that. He finally laid it on him about his religion, his church. Man took that. Finally, it his Achilles heel. He started telling him about his AA affiliation. And he just shouldn't have did that. So he started out by telling him, he said, you know, that other thing you belong to, AA, that thing must be something like Noah's Ark. The man looked at him, he said, what do you mean like Noah's Ark? He says, you know, on that Ark, he said, with all those people on there together, there had to be some gossip. Yeah. And he said, with all those animals on there, there had to be some filth. And he says, I just imagine that AA is like Noah's Ark. He says, you know, it really is. He said, in AA, it's very much like Noah's Ark. He says, you know, we do have a little gossip. And every once in a while, we have a little filth. But like Noah's Ark, everybody that stayed in it stays dry. But you know, you and I go one step beyond staying dry. We stay sober, because there's a vast difference. Nothing grows where it's always just dry, unless it's cactus and that'll stick you, you know, one of those kind of things. Well, you know, I'm not going to take this beautiful, precious morning to give you a blow-by-blow description of my drinking. That's not necessary. All you got to do if you're an alcoholic is to open your mouth and swallow. You'll get drunk if you do it long enough and often enough, which I certainly did. But to let you know that I belong with you and to you. You know, the big book tells us that our stories reveal in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. Well, briefly, what happened was I got drunk. You know? And on top of that, when I came in here, people talked a lot about wino. Well, I certainly didn't want the name of being a wino. And I don't believe that women... See, winos are men. Women are winettes. And that's what I was, a winette. And so I don't need to go through all of that to tell you what happens to people that drink excessive amounts of wine. You know, you wake up in the morning, or wake up sometime or other, and you look at the clock and it says 6. It doesn't say anything. It just says tick-tock and all that type of stuff, and 6. And you lay there and you wonder, now, which 6 is it? Is it 6 in the morning or 6 in the evening? Clock don't say anything else. 6. Now, you want a drink of water so bad you don't know what to do. But you know, if you go out and get a drink of water, you're afraid somebody will say, are you just now coming home, or what are you doing up so early? So you lay there and you hoping somebody will fry some bacon, or some kids will go to school, or something will happen so that you'll know what six it is. And you still want a drink of water. Finally, you want to go to the bathroom. The clock still says 6. So you just simply lay there and suffer at both ends because you're scared to get up. So I know all about that time element, too. I don't know whether you people know anything about the pawning element, but I know all about that, too. I had a watch that stayed in the pawn shop so much it wouldn't run on a Jewish holiday, you know. I know all about these things that people call hobbies. Now, if you just have a hobby, you won't drink so much, you know. I know about that, too. I had a hobby. I have a green thumb. And I love to grow flowers. And a friend of mine, one day, she told me, now, if you just cultivate your flower garden, darling, you won't drink so much. So out I would go every morning with my bottle of wine to cultivate my flower garden. And, you know, you set the bottle down on the ground, and if you're not careful, you'll knock it over, you know. So I just dug a little hole there and would set the bottle down in the hole. Don't ever drink, don't drink, period. But, I mean, if you should, which I prayed and hope you don't ever drink wine through a straw. That's not nice. So I'd put a couple of straws in the bottle and drink, you know, so you could pull the weeds up around the petunias. And I woke up one morning and there was more straws sticking out of the ground than there was petunias. So this sort of thing went on with me for quite a number of years, you know. And of course, I suppose you wonder what my occupation was at that time. Well, I tended bar. I believed in on-the-job training, and so I got a job as bartender. And, of course, I constantly got fired out of first one and then the other. But then one day, now I'm not going to tell you that I never tried to stop, you know, how you half-ass do things. I stayed sober one time for 40 days during Lent. Oh, brother, that was a great one. During Lent, I stayed sober 40 days. Before Lent was over, I hated the Pope, the Bishop, the nuns, and all altar boys. I despised everybody. And furthermore, they didn't send me a letter of appreciation for this thing. Now, this was a terrible thing, you know. But I defeated my purpose. At that time, I think Lent was over at 12 o'clock on Saturday or something. But I sat there looking at that clock, and I had a can opener. Those days, you had to open the can with a can opener. And I sat there with a can opener, draw it back on that can, waiting for 12 o'clock, and I stabbed the hell out of it a minute before 12 o'clock. Sunday morning, I was drunk again. As I say, this sort of thing went on and on. Finally, what happened? What happened? I'll tell you what happened. It happened on a Saturday night I shall never forget, because for some unknown reason, I happened to be home this particular Saturday night. And I was listening to radio, me and Sweet Lucy. That was I worked for her every day, and she whipped hell out of me right along with it. And I happened to be sitting there listening to my radio. Now, I did not turn the radio on to this station, because when you were in my condition, you did not turn radios on to any station. You just plugged them in and they played. You heard voices all the time anyhow, so it didn't make any difference. But as I sat there that Saturday night listening to this radio, a story came on, and it was called The Glass Crutch. And it was about a woman that had a drinking problem. Now, if it had been about a man that had a drinking problem, all the men I knew had some kind of problem. I wouldn't have even have listened, you know, if they knew me, they had a problem. And nevertheless, this story was about this woman. And I don't remember to this day any of the ingredients of that story. All I can remember that it was about a woman that had a drinking problem. And it said, if you ever need our help, we'll be the first number in the book. Oh, now, wait a minute. If that woman would just quit drinking whiskey and get some nice, clean, cool wine, she'd be okay, you know? But do you know, if any of you have ever read The Hound of Heaven, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. Because, honey, if he wants you, he's going to get you. That is for sure. You know who he is? If you don't know who he is, then read the big book. You might find out who he is, you know? There are other books that tell you about him, too. Well, nevertheless, I thought to myself, that chick is really in trouble. She's in bad trouble. But that does not apply to me. And do you know, it was 6 or 7 years after hearing that story that it did apply to me. It applied to me then, but, you know, I didn't want to admit to that. I can remember walking down the street. Now, this did not happen every day, every week, or every month. But it happened. I can remember walking down the street, and it seemed as if the heel plates on my shoes would beat out the very words, the glass crutch, the glass crutch. What world is this? I can remember listening to the clock, and it did not say tick-tock, tick-tock. It said the glass crutch, the glass crutch. And finally, that day came when I was sitting trying to read the newspaper, and it seemed as if every word on that newspaper said the glass crutch. And I said, my Lord, what does this mean? My eyes left that newspaper and fell down on my hand. Holly, you cannot even read the newspaper without the glass crutch, because there I sat holding my favorite beverage trying to read the paper. Now, it would sound dramatic to say immediately I dropped that glass and ran to the phone. Not me. I just drank some more. And see, I had reached the stage of zombieism. That is, if you don't drink, you don't get sober. If you do drink, you don't get drunk. You know, you're a zombie. One of those kind of things. Finally, I said, well, you know, one thing, I think I will call that number. I looked in the phone book there. I said, now I know they're lying. It's not going to be in there. Sure enough, there it was, big as light. Right there. So I dialed them. I said, you know, I got a friend out here, and I said, I think she's losing her mind. Would you send somebody out to talk to her? And the lady said, would you like to have somebody talk to you? I said, oh, no. Not me. Well, I don't know what the whether it was 24, 48, or what, hours later. I tried again. Here he is. You know, he's working with you, you know. That hound of heaven. So finally, I called, and the lady said, she said, well, what is your name? I said, Holly. She says, where do you live? I said, I thought this thing's supposed to be anonymous. How come I have to tell you where I live at? She said, well, we'd want to help you. She said, well, I'll have someone call you. She finally got the information out of me. You know, I was very reluctant about telling anybody anything. Finally, she said, well, I'll have a lady call you. This lady called me, and she said a dumb thing. She said, now, if you've got anything out there to drink, get rid of it. I did. I drank it up. And, now, having been like a zombie for quite some time, alcohol is everything the big book says it is, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Because, you know, just about 45 minutes before time for me to go to that first meeting, a few of my good lush-head buddies came by, and they gave me a few drinks, and it was the same as pouring coal oil on the dying embers. I got drunk. Just when you don't want to, you do, you know. It livened all this up. So away we go to this meeting, you know. One of the things this woman said to me that I shall never forget. I had two children, and I said this to her. I said, you know, I got to do something on account of these kids. She says, look, you're going to do this for yourself. Yeah, that's true. You're going to do this for yourself. You're not going to do it for your job. You're not going to do it for your kids. You're not going to do it for anybody but yourself, because once you start doing it for yourself, the first time they piss you off, you're going to get mad, and you ain't going to do it for nobody, you know? You better do it for yourself. So away we go to this meeting. Do it for yourself. Do it for yourself. And then she did a stupid thing. When she got to the door, well, they did a stupid thing, so I thought, you know, nobody didn't have any sense but me. You know, I hadn't had all the sense in the world. You know how we feel. Now, drunk as I am, or high as I am, I know what's going on, but it seems like I can't seem to fight it. The minute I walked in the door, three other women jumped up and they said, we'll help you with her. They thought this was going to be my pallbearers. I've outlived most of them already. You know? They say. So then, my one sponsor, and I mean in those days, you talking about sponsoring people. We sponsored people, you know. You know, today nobody likes for me to be their sponsor, you know. But they'll come to me and ask me, but they don't like me. But that's all right with me. Perfectly right, because I'm going to sponsor you, honey. You better believe it. You know? Anyway, she kept pulling out. I was scared of this woman. You know, she had buck teeth, and I didn't know whether she was going to bite or what. And she kept pulling out this who me on me, you know. And she'd say, just answer yes to three, dear, and you're in. I thought, this old biddy must be getting 50 cents a yes or something. And at that time, they were the craziest questions I'd ever heard in my life. Is drinking clouding your reputation? Well, if you've been in the fog for about 20 years, you don't know whether it's cloudy or not. And then she come on with another one. She's still holding up that finger, all three of them. Do you seek a lower environment while drinking? Why, heavens no, I merely created a lower environment while drinking. And then she pulled a doozy on me. Oh, this one was a good one. Do you prefer to drink alone? If I'm buying it, yes. If you're buying it, no. So anyway, nobody said, do you want to go to a meeting tonight? They simply said, we will be by tonight. And, you know, I was scared of them people, you know, really. And you know, another thing about the beginning of the whole thing, you know, I felt about them like some men today feel about their wives. You know, I wish you'd go away and don't bother me, but don't go so far I can't find you if I need you. You know, one of those kind of things. That's simply... That was simply the way I felt about these lovely women. And away we would go. Well, and you know, this business of, just go to meetings and don't drink. They didn't tell us too much then about just, you're going to come to meetings. You know, don't go, you're going to come, because we're going to come for you, one of those things. But in between times, you're going to do something about these steps. Yeah. To me, that is the meat of the program, these steps. That's what they're there for. You know, all 12 of them, every one of them, you know. To me, they are divinely inspired. Because, you see, like the 12 disciples, each one of them bring me a message. Can you imagine anything bringing a drunk like me a message? You know. Finally, when that day came, when I could digest these steps, you know, just sitting around the table talking about how drunk I used to get, you know, you're going to start lying, you know, one thing after another, you know. But everybody got drunker than everybody else, you know, that kind of thing, you know. In other words, it's one of these things, can you top this, you know. But, you know, we learned, see, to glorify the program and stop deifying your drinking, you know. As if you were Saint Drunk somebody, you know, one of those kind of things. No, no. That isn't where it is, see. It is the message. And I do believe this morning, and I believe it with all of my heart, that the message this morning is here. Say, you bring it to me, your being here. Because, you know, I wouldn't get up this time in the morning to hear me. No way in the world. No way in the world. But when I look at these steps, and just looking at them is not enough. I've got to put these 12 steps into practice each day, you know. You know, there was a man that was on the board where I worked. Bless his heart. He and I had a few words one day. And he's one of those big blustery people that feels that, you know, if he raises his voice, you know, you're supposed to back down and all that sort of stuff. And, I just don't back down off of too many things, especially if I feel that I'm right, you know, because I'm an alcoholic, I guess. I don't know. He says, well, you know, after all, this is not AA. I said, I'll fix your ticket, bud. I said, oh, so we don't practice the principles at work because this isn't AA. He said, well, what do you mean? I said, you said this isn't AA. And I said, you and I are members of the same organization. So we don't practice the principles only at the meeting. Is that it? Oh, I didn't mean that. I said, okay, let's get with it then. It says, in all our affairs. I said, isn't this an affair? Or shall we carry on another affair? So, you know, he knows I will reach up on that shelf, and I have the title of the big book, Bitch. He knows I'll reach up on that shelf and read the book on him in a minute, you know. Because, you see, I've had that book read on me many times. Because I can remember sitting at, we do older members of the program. We do kind of straighten one another out, and we need it. I remember one time spouting out at a meeting there, and one of the young ladies passed me a piece of literature that was a reprint. And I said, oh, I have that book. I know that. She says, well, obviously you haven't read it. So, you know, those things are good for me, for people like me every once in a while. Kind of keep you close to your maker. Kind of keeps me close to everybody else. So when I look at that first step, that is the step that brings me a message that I never knew existed. Truthfully, humility. When I look at the first step, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our lives had become unmanageable. I like to call that first step Peter. Because you see, in this program, you and I become disciples, like the 12 disciples. A disciple is a person that learns to listen, and then he listens so he can learn. And then he becomes an apostle because he's got a message, and he carries that message. And, you know, that's what Peter was. That's what that first step is. And that's how the two are akin to each other. You know, you remember Peter, he was that big, blusterous, boisterous type of person, full of what he thought he had the real McCoy. He was a very impulsive person. He was a born leader, but he was also a coward. You know, our divine Lord said to Peter one day, before he called him the rock, he says, you know, you're going to deny me three times. And Peter says, oh, no, 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 not me. Never, Lord, would I deny you. You see, the time of testing had not come. You and I can sit around here and spout all day long, oh, yes, I'm powerless over alcohol my life, and I never take a drink again in my life. Wait until that time of testing. That's it. See, here's poor old Peter, you know, bless his heart. Oh, Lord, no, no. You can identify him. He's going to go out here and don't go out here and say, Holly said that Peter was an alcoholic. I did not. I said he brought me a message. And the message is the message of humility. So here is Peter, with all of his boisterousness, with all of his self-confidence. Oh, no, Lord, not me. Never would I. He says before, and our divine Lord told him, before the cock crows thrice, you will deny me. You see, Peter had not, like you and I at certain times, hadn't faced up to the time of testing. You know. How many times haven't you and I said, before we found this beautiful way of life, I'll never take another drink. But that time of testing hadn't come. So here's dear old Peter, like Peter. You see, We don't want to be ostracized. We want to be approved of. We don't want to be left out. We want people to accept us. Because why? Like Peter, we're a coward. We're afraid that people won't like you. You know. So I got to kill myself so you'll like me. You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So here's dear old Peter. He's out there, you know, and someone says, have you... Weren't you with the Galilean? And Peter says, oh, no, not me. I wasn't with him. Mm-mm, no. Finally, someone else says to him, weren't you with the cockroach? Someone else said, well, didn't I see you with him? Oh, no, 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 not me. Finally, what happened? The third time that he was asked this, he began to curse and swear. Now, you mean telling me I was out there? I wasn't out there. No such a thing, and the cock crew three times. Can't you identify with that time of testing, how when some of you have said you'd never take another drink, you know? And finally someone said, hey, I thought you were never going to take a drink. Oh, well, you know, I just said that, you know. No, I don't think I said that. I just said I wasn't going to drink some of this. I didn't say I wasn't going to never drink anymore. I said I wasn't drinking more wine. Then again, see, that time of testing, that is what is so important. Then finally someone will ask you, hey, man, I thought you wasn't going to drink again. Why in the hell don't you mind your own business? I ain't bothering you. Like Peter, that time of testing. That cowardice. See, when that time came to Peter, what was he doing? He was warming his hands by the fire with the centurion. And oh, friends, how many times don't we warm our hands by the fire with the centurion? How do I warm my hands when I'm just going down to the bar just to see what's going on? I'm not going to drink. I'm just going down there. See? You know, when I pass one of them FDD stores, sudden death and destruction stores, you know, I'm going to buy this for some friends. I'm just going to take it home. You're warming your hands by the fire with the centurion, you know. There it is. But I just dropped in to see who was in there. You know, those people in there, if they want to see you, they know where you live at, you know. One of those kind of things. You see, every time I have learned that I learned as a child that I, when I went to church in those days, I go to church now, but then it was a different thing. I had to go then. I go now because I want to. I was taught to avoid the near occasion of sin. Well, I went out looking for the first occasion. But see, I have learned in here to avoid the near occasion of that first drink. So I do not warm my hands by the fire with a centurion. See. You know, every time that I feel, or I get that feeling. Oh, it's less and less, but we're human. Well, you know, you got to pick up a bottle sometimes, you know, and read the label on there to see what percentage it is. What do you care what percentage it is? You know, you want to take the top off of it and smell it. For what? See, Peter learned humility. He learned humility, like you and I learn humility through that time of testing. That's why we say, lead us not into temptation. Because you know why? You and I can't stand too much testing. You know? Oh, you got on, oh, test me, Lord. Oh, you don't mean that, you know? You mean protect me. That's what you mean. You don't mean all that testing. You know what Samuel said? Lead me not into temptation, you know? Lord, protect me. Because you see, I learned the lesson. Like Peter. Not to warm my hands by that fire. That lesson of humility. That tells me this, Holly, you are powerless over alcohol. And your life is unmanageable. See? In other words, cool it when it comes to that. You know? So when I look at this first step where I am powerless, all I have got to think, this bragging, like Peter did. Oh, no, not me, I'll never. That is why this program is is invaluable to me, because it doesn't say never, it says one day at a time. Just simply one day at a time. You know, I won't today. That's it. And then as we go a step further, we learn another beautiful message. The second step brings me a beautiful message, and we'll call that Thomas. There was a disciple by the name of Thomas. He brings us the message of belief by experience. You know, I'm sure you've heard of this phrase, doubting Thomas. Well, you know, Thomas was one of these kind of people like we find sometimes today. And I don't go out and say, I said Thomas was an alcoholic. I didn't say so. I said he brought me the message of experience by belief. He had doubt in his mind. Like many of us, when we read that second step where we came to believe in a power greater than ourselves that could restore us to sanity. See, Thomas, we're doubting Thomas. As Thomas, he just said, well, you know, I go along with it, but, you know, I just can't believe that he, our divine Lord, rose from the dead. He said, I just can't believe that, you know. And many times, you know, when we speak of the spiritual in the program and we talk about God, that's why I like you people down here so well. You don't go around here, you're not afraid to say God. You know, you go to some places and people will talk about HP and JC and all that kind of crap. Don't hand me that. It's as God as you understand it. You know? You know, when I hear people come on with that kind of stuff. Now, my grandfather's name was Scott Martin, you know. And no way in the world. Now, he was my grandfather, and you talking about. You ever think I'd walk up to him and call him Scotty? Not live. You call him grandfather, you know, one of those kind of. So now all of a sudden, my heavenly father, I've got to give him a nickname. You know, you don't know God that well to be giving him no nickname. You know that. You know you don't. But here is our friend Thomas, Dalton Thomas. So Thomas, you know, he said, I can't believe this. Belief by experience. He had not had the experience. That is why some of us today are afraid of that second step, that we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves that could restore us to sanity, which only means sane thinking. So Thomas, you know, like many of us, he had to be shown. He wanted to know that he knew. And what did our divine Lord said to Thomas? Reach hither thy finger. See, Thomas had said, if I can see the marks in his hand, if I can see where he's been pierced in his side, he says, then I can believe. You know. And our divine Lord said, reach hither thy finger. Just reach out your finger. You see, if you wanted a taxi today, what would you do? Stand there on the side of the street and just look? You'd reach out your hand, would you not? When Thomas reached out his finger, it's the same as when you and I reach out our finger. Not only your finger rides in the taxi, your whole body rides, don't it? You don't just carry your finger down the street, your whole body. So when Thomas reached hither his finger, the whole man was involved. If you want to go up on an elevator, you don't just stand there and look at the thing, do you? You reach out your finger, don't you? So we came to believe in a power greater than ourselves that could restore me to sane thinking. Well, you might say, well, you know, you will hear this old deal about, well, I don't have to have that God stuff. I'm a self-made man. I say, no wonder you screwed up then if you're self-made. You know, you're an elven fix, you know. Because, you see, this self-knowledge that sometimes that we have, this self-sufficiency that sometimes we have, leads to self-delusion, which also leads to self-pity, you know. So when one reaches out his finger, you know, it's like this woman. You know, this woman that we've heard about, we've read about, we learned about in Sunday school. Here was this woman that had been sick for a number of years. Oh, a number of years. She had tried everything that she possibly could try. She said, if I can just touch the hem of his garment. Oh, she said, you know, just let me touch it. She had possibly went to all kinds of doctors. She had possibly went to all kinds of people that performed hypnotic deals and all that sort of thing. But you know what the book of books says? That having tried all, she had tried everything else. Yeah. Having tried it all, everything. She says, if I can just but touch the hem of his garment, just touch it. It's like we were talking a minute ago to my friend over here, and he says, well, we're going to feel a spirit today. Maybe not a whole lot, he said, but a little bit. I said, yes, it's just like Brill cream, a little dab will do you. You don't need a whole lot. Just a little bit. But, you know, lots of times we like to feel, we will find those people, you know, that will say, well, you know, after all, I don't need all of that. Not only is he self-made, he's going to try to make you feel the way that he feels. But when one comes to believe in something, when one becomes involved, like this woman, she says, if I can just touch it, you know, I will be made whole. I'll feel all right. And that's what you and I do. Then you find those kind of people that are attention getters. I don't believe it. Why is it an attention getter? A person that doesn't believe always wants to go around telling you. You haven't even asked him about it. And he wants to go around and keep telling you, I don't believe in God. I don't believe in it. Well, why do you keep it to yourself if you don't believe in it? You can be talking about automobiles, the gas situation, and anything else, and he'll jump up and tell you, you don't believe in God. Well, what's that got to do with it? Yeah. Why do you keep talking about something you don't believe in? He wants attention. But I bet you when he gets home, he says, God, now look, don't pay no attention to that. You know. Just like a friend of mine, a fellow was telling me about, oh, he was ready to die and go to heaven and every place else, you know. He says, I'm ready to go at any moment. Oh, yes, I believe. And he had open heart surgery. And the doctors told him, says, sir, now remember now, he said he's all ready to go. Everything was cool. Everything's fine, you know. And he got on that operating table and he said, God, can't you take a joke? But came to believe. Came to believe in a power greater than ourselves that could restore me to sanity. The kind of sanity that tells me that any time, any person, place, or thing is so important that I have to take a drink of it, that's the person, place, or thing that I do not need. You had better believe it. I don't need it. See, Thomas wanted to know what he knew. He had to be shown. You and I sometimes feel I have to be shown. You know, my friends, if you can't feel, if you can't see, just be quiet and it'll come to you. It doesn't, there's no date on that second step that you came to believe on the 18th day of August 1980 or anything like that. Came to believe. The book of books, where every one of these 12 steps came out of, says, just be still and know that I am God. Just be still. You see, this person that constantly runs around telling you about what he don't believe in, if you just be still. And that's all there is to it. And that's what that second step, it brings me the message of belief by experience. That's it. See, I was taught about a God of wrath and a God of punishment and all that kind of stuff. I could not comprehend a God of love, a God, a forgiving God. But I came to believe in one. In this fellowship. Here's where I met him, in this fellowship. I'd heard about him before then. But, you know, the kind that I'd heard about, you know, people used to tell me, you know, now, if you just quit that drinking, and you just straighten up, and you pray, you're going to be all right. You're going to be fine. You quit everything first, and then you pray. I found out I had to do some praying before I could quit. Yeah? That's the way it had to work with me. And then, you know, we have a beautiful message of decision. Matthew. Let's call him Matthew. That beautiful third step. Where we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God, as we understand it. This is Matthew. He gives me the message of decision in this way. You see, here's Matthew. He's a tax collector. He's not a very happy person. Oh, he's got a good job, but he's miserable. He is associating with people that he don't like. But because of his activities, he couldn't associate with other people. Can't you identify with him? Yeah. Haven't you ever associated and drank with people and everything that you didn't particularly like? But you didn't, nobody else wanted you. And you didn't feel right anywhere else. So here's my friend, our friend Matthew, you know. His name was Levi at that time, and he was a very unhappy creature. He was collecting taxes for the Roman Empire, and he hated that. The job was all right and all that sort of thing, but, well, he was a lonely person. And one day our divine Lord came along, and he said, here's Matthew there. He said, come on, Matthew. One of those kind of things. Now, we will read nowhere where Matthew said, well, you know, leave your phone number, or you go on, I'll catch up with you later, or something like that. Then Matthew had the privilege of decision, which you and I have. And it said he dropped everything and he straightway. That's what Matthew did. The power, the privilege of decision. Made a decision, you know. You know, when it comes down to decision, you and I, sometimes when things come up in our lives, we will do thus and so forth, providing so-and-so does thus and so forth. But it says, made a decision to turn my life and my will over to the care of God. Not over the care of Harry or Sarah or providing what Jane does or John does, you know. I let my decisions rest on my fellow man. My decisions are not supposed to rest on my fellow man. It doesn't say, his name isn't in that book, you know. Made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. Did you see those words? Did you read those words? Over to the care of. In other words, it's telling me you can take it back anytime you want to. It's like when you go to put your money in the bank, you don't give your money to that man down there. You put it in the care of the bank. And the longer you leave it there, the more interest you'll draw. But if you go down there every day taking some of it out, you're not going to have any interest. Not very much. Over to the care of God. Well, you might say, well, I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God this morning, but now, wait a minute, I'm going to stop right now and do this and so forth. Then I'll come back and take up later where I left off. Don't work like that, you know. You keep running down there to that bank every 5 minutes and say, hey, you got my money? Let me see my money, you know. First thing you know, somebody's going to tell you, look, would you take your money and get out of here, please? You know. But you see, yes, interest. You see, you and I can draw on this interest when we need it. See, sometimes that interest, you say, well, I think I'll take my book down there today and let them put the interest in there for me. And it looks pretty good, don't it? You know? I'm operating on that interest. But I got to leave it there. I got to renew my contract, you know. Sometimes I have to renew my contract every 5 minutes, but just don't take it out. Leave it there. Say, Lord, look here, wait a minute. I'm drawing too much on this interest right now, you know. Let me add to it instead of taking from it. Here was poor old Matthew. Bless his heart. He hated everything that he did. Everything. But when he made that decision to turn his will and his life over to the care of God, a decision, a beautiful decision, see. No, he didn't worry. You know, sometimes, you know, we're afraid, you know, if I make a decision like that, oh, you know, what's going to happen? You know, or I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. And then I asked God for such and such a thing, and I didn't get it. So I'm going to take it back because I did. Well, have you ever heard of the divine snub? Thinking, well, you could watch it. He heard what you said. But you just wasn't ready for what you asked. You know? So what you're known as a divine snub. Because, you know. So here we are. This is, well, this decision. One has to make a stand, because if one does not make a stand, he'll fall for anything. If I have to be pulled backwards and forwards, see, not only does the third step protect me from that bottle, it protects me from me. It protects me from all those that seek to do me in. See. In other words, it protects me from warming my hands by the fire with the centurion. Because if I have made that decision, I've got no business over there with the centurion whatsoever. None whatsoever. So hence, I must make that stand. I must accept that decision. And do you know, many times, you know, you feel like, big deal. Oh, I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. Oh, I'm doing God a favor. Who else wants the will and the life of a drunk? Nobody. No. So here we are. You know. Then again, we will say, well, I could make this decision, but I got to wait until such and such a thing happens. I'm just not ready to give in yet completely. You know, like when Moses went before the Pharaoh, and he said, let my people go. And after plague, no dice. And finally, when you remember, you recall rather, when the land was infested with frogs, and Moses went again before the Pharaoh, and the Pharaoh says, well, on tomorrow. No, come back tomorrow. Well, let me think about it till tomorrow. Do you know what that meant? Now, the land was already invested with frogs. Frogs in the bathtub, frogs in the bed, frogs in the food. But one more night with the frogs. One more night. Sometimes when you and I refuse to give up, that means one more night with the frogs. I can't give in. I can't make a decision to let go and let God. I'd rather have one more night with the frogs. That's what you're saying, isn't it? Because the program teaches me to let go and let God. But no, we'd rather have one more night with the frogs. Simpler, isn't it, that way? And then you know we have a step that brings us a message of common sense. That's a disciple called Philip. Fourth step. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Philip was known as the common sense disciple, apostle. See, Philip was one that asked questions. When he didn't understand the thing, he asked questions. He would ask questions to those that had been around longer than him. That's what the book says. So evidently he must have did that. You know? In other words, when we meet Philip, Philip was running away from the little town in which he lived in because he didn't like what was going on. And when you and I get to the place where we take a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves, it is because we are running away from a little town that you wasn't too happy in. And you got to find out some of these things. We say, oh, now look, I'm sober, so I don't need an inventory. Now, since I quit drinking, that's all I need to do. I don't need to take no inventory. Why? I wonder why. Well, the book of books where all this come out of, as I said before, it says, ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. You don't want to be free, is that it? You don't want to know the truth, is that it? Oh, no. You see, you can live with yourself all your life and don't know your neighbor next door better than you do you. Because why? I don't want to know the truth about myself. You say, well, I don't know how to go about taking an inventory. Common sense, ask somebody how you do it then, you know. So look, I've got to do something about this inventory of mine. How do I go about it? See. But you know, that was one of the hard things for me to do, was to take an inventory. You know, I said, well, wait a minute. Maybe I need a model to go by. And you know, any model you're going to find, you see, there's only two books in the world anyway. There's a lot of other, shall we say, literature, but two books. That's the big book and the book of books. The book of books comes first and everything else come out of that, you know. I oftentimes, you know, I think of the story of Jacob and Esau. And when it comes down to taking an inventory, because this is one of the greatest inventories that ever was. You remember these two boys were born. Well, one of them, like I was. Most of the time we have resentments over which we have no control whatsoever. You know, one of them happened to be born before the other. Jacob didn't like that at all, because his brother was born first, you know. And of course he was going to get all of the blessing, and he was going to be head of the family and all of this sort of thing. Jacob resented that. You see, he resented the fact that his brother was born first. Now, sometimes you and I resent people in AA because they came in there before you did. You know. Yeah. Hell, nobody didn't tell you to get up off of the bar and come on in. You can come on in too. So here he was, and he's got to connive. He started out by conniving. Jacob says, well, you know, I've got to get all this away from my brother. You know, so first he started out by being deceitful. Yeah. He goes to his brother one time there. He says, I got to get this birthright, and I got to get the blessing. So he finds his brother one time, you know, just like alcohol will do. You hit you below the belt every time. And his brother came up to him hungry one day, and his brother says, you know, I'd give anything in the world if I could have some of that, whatever you're cooking there. And Jacob says to him, fly, you know. How about your birthright there? Would you give me that? Sounded like an alcoholic, didn't he? He said, oh, yeah, his brother says, yes. Of course, you have to look at him, too. He's a glutton. Okay, so he got it. Conniving, scheming, planning. That's what I found in my inventory about me. Conniving, scheming. Not wanting to work, not wanting to settle for what is rightfully mine, but I want what you got. Okay. Now, he's got to get the father's blessing. So what does he do? He had an ally in his mother, you know. So there he goes, imitating his brother, bowing before his father, receiving the blessing that was not his. Then after he had connived and he had schemed, what's the next thing we generally do is then run. That's what we do. We run. So then we're told that he goes off into a far country, you know. See, the thing that we find, that I found, pardon me for using the word we all the time, but I'm accustomed to that, I mean me. You know, after we have schemed and we've connived, the next thing to do is to run, is it not? Because what sets in is fear. And I'm a coward, I can't take it. And I can't stand payback. And in my inventory, I find when I see where things have happened to me, it's payback, but I can't accept payback. So like Jacob, he goes down this far country, you know, there, and he starts there working for old Lebanon there, and he sees a pretty girl over there named Rachel, and he wants to marry her, and he said, okay. His father says to father-in-law, to be, says, okay, who was his uncle at that time, says, okay, you work 7 years, and I'll give her to you. Well, all right, he works 7 years, and after the 7 years is up, now something else happens, and it's payback. You and I wonder sometimes, why does these things happen to me? Baby, it's payback, that's what it is. So, okay, now the night of the wedding, or the day of the wedding, or whenever it was they got married there, you know, who does he marry? Married the wrong woman. Because they had on all this wedding stuff, and instead of marrying Rachel, he marries Leah. She's got on all this stuff, and the book says that she was had sore eyes there, and she was rather on the heavy side, and he wakes up the next day, and he finds out he's been married to a big, red, sore-eyed, fat chick. And he's mad as he can be. Get off all this wedding stuff and find. Now, you know, well, I ain't gonna say Jacob was an alcoholic, but then I don't know. Anytime you don't get married with somebody's all that stuff on, you ain't peeped underneath to see what's happening, something's wrong. Listen, nevertheless, this is what happened. So now he goes back and he says, I feel like I'm cheated in this. He forgot what he did to his brother. He needed to take a searching and fearless moral inventory. He forgot what he had did, and he couldn't accept it. You know, sometimes, you know, when we start taking our own inventory, say, yeah, but look what happened to me. But look what you did. You know, that's why you got what you got. That's why Jacob got what he got, because what he did. Okay. Now he got to go out and work 7 years to get the other one. That's something. Is that something? And then he can't get along with his father-in-law, so he lights up. But finally, his day of reckoning came. He knew in going back to his home that he's going to have to face this brother. He knew he's going to have to face him. So he sends gifts on ahead and all like that.
But we are told that one night, under the starry skies, he wrestled with a stranger, which I like to believe was his own conscience. And he says, as he wrestled with the stranger, he says, "Let me go, let me go, let me go." He said, "I'll not let you go till you bless me." Which is telling me this. When you and I wrestle night after night with this conscience, this person that is really you, it will haunt you until you learn to forgive yourself. "I will not let you go until you bless me." And we are told that while Jacob wrestled, his thigh become unjointed, and forever after he walked with a limp. Sometimes God has to break your neck or your leg to get you to stand up straight. Sometimes you have to become completely unjointed before you can be made whole. And that's what happens in inventory. You become unjointed. See? And as he walked that night, and as he walked, he came acquainted with himself. And that's what you and I do in inventory. We become acquainted with ourselves. It's just that simple, my friends. And now, we learn self-forgiveness. Judas. Let's look at the fifth step. I call this step Judas. For the simple reason is this, my friends. You know, Judas betrayed our divine Lord. And this step will betray you every time if you think that you, "Well, I don't have to admit to God ourselves or another human being the exact nature of my wrong. I don't have to do that, you know." It'll betray you, my friends, if I don't. Self-forgiveness. You see, Jacob wrestled with his conscience. Judas could not forgive himself, so he went out and hung himself. Now, who was this guy, Judas, that betrayed our divine Lord? How do I identify him with that fifth step? Admit to God ourselves and another human being the exact nature of our wrong. Not minute by minute things, but the exact nature. See, Judas, in the first place, he was a wrongdoing jive turkey to begin with, you know. And here he was. Sometimes we say to ourselves, you know, see, Judas didn't need 30 pieces of silver. He carried the money around all the time anyway. And here he said, one day, and the book of books says, and then Satan entered into Judas. Satan. "Have you ever tried to think, why did I do this? I don't know why. I don't know why I did." Well, my friends, have you ever heard anybody say when you see somebody act up, you say, "Well, what's wrong with him? He just got hell in him." Exact nature is wrong. He just got hell in him. Yeah. See, sometimes, many times, we set ourselves up to be tempted. No, you set yourself up. And the devil is already there. Just because you come in today, hey, don't worry, he came in too. He come right on in right along with you. He said, "There goes that turkey, I'm going right with him," you know? One of those kind of things. So there's that Judas. He is already plotting and planning and conniving and all that sort of thing. How can I do this treacherous thing? So what? And Satan entered into Judas. Haven't you ever sat alone by yourself, you know, and you said, "Well, you know, I could do this or I could do that." And honey, the devil come along and just helped you right out. You said, "Well, I don't know how in the devil I got into this." "Oh, yes, you do." You know, you'd already paved the way and you had an ally and he stepped right in and helped you. The exact nature. The exact nature of my wrong. See? Well, then I was warming my hands over the fire with the centurion. That's exactly what happened. See? And it got too hot, and you know the devil loves heat, and he walked right in with you. One of those kind of things. Now, when do I take the fifth step? There is no date that says when I will take the fifth step. It is not written that I will take the fifth step May the 15th, 1888, or 1999. But it'll get you. You will take it. You will begin to feel that uncomfortable. You will begin to feel this unjointedness. And I will feel that I better do something about it. And then, you know, my friends, we look at this sixth step where we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And many times I might feel, oh, look, I got to hold on to this. We call this Simon the Zealot. See, Simon was one of those people known in his time as a hatchet man. In other words, a guerrilla fighter is what we would call him today. Say. But you know, he found that the truth was mightier than the sword. See, the truth is a pretty heavy thing to handle. See, a lie, you can handle a lie, but the truth is heavy. It is really heavy. So we're entirely ready to have God remove it because I can't. See, what are some of the things I don't want removed? Oh, I couldn't stand to have that removed. But some of these things, if I don't have them removed, they are going to remove me. That's exactly what happened. My pride won't let this go. See, I have got to be the winner. I have got to be great. I have got to have my way. See, when pride gets in the way, frustration sets in. Let me tell you a little story. There was once an eagle. Oh, he was a mighty bird, as we know most eagles are, and as he flew around and all that sort of stuff, he'd swoop down in the lake there and he'd get a fish and he'd soar up high. And oh, he was the bird of the air. He was fine. But one day, his pride got the best of him. He saw a seal down there. And this seal was laying down there, you know, not in the water where seals are mostly at, but kind of on the slime there, you know. So this eagle figured, well, now I'm going down there and I'm going to drag this seal out, you know, because I'm mighty. So when he went down there, his pride tells him, I got to do it because I am the god of the air. I'm an eagle. And as he stuck his talons into this seal, the seal began to ease out towards the water. But this eagle's pride would not let him let go and let God. Or would not let his pride, would not let him pull his talons out. And in his frustration, instead of pulling out, he dug in tighter. You know how sometimes you and I, when we feel that we're going to lose a thing, instead of coming letting go gracefully, we dig in tighter. And that's what this eagle did. He dug in tighter. In his frustration, he did not know. And this slimy skin on the seal began to cover around those talons. And that seal pulled him right on out in the ocean and drowned him. You know, let go and let God, because the steps says to do that, you know. And it also tells us there that God could and would if he was sought. And then all you got to do is let go. Sounds easy, but it's tough. It's a tough titty, but you need the milk, you know. You know? So here we are. And then we look at this seventh step. Say, Nathaniel. You know, he was a short guy, little Nathaniel, bless his heart. Humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Many times we feel, oh, that's a little bitty step. I don't need to pay attention to that because that's just a teeny tiny step. Humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Well, what's that got to do with my character defects? I don't know. Remember, the fleas come with the dog, you know? Humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Procrastination, reservation, shortcomings. Procrastination and pretense. Am I staying sober for me or am I pretending? See, pretense. Am I pretending that I am staying sober and taking them pills all the same time, you know? And oh, I'm sober. See. Well, you know, you say, hey, you ain't sober, kid, you taking pills. Oh, no, I'm not taking it. You know, but you know, I tell you one thing. I just, why don't you tell the doctor you're an alcoholic and you don't need to take all those pills? Well, you know, just as soon as I get over the hump, I'm going to stop taking these pills and my nerves quiet down. And, you know, I can't sleep at night. And I'm so tired of laying there counting sheep. Well, talk to the shepherd and you don't have to count sheep, you know? You know? So, lay off the pills, you know? So then there is that procrastination. Well, you know, I just don't feel that one of those kind of things that there never was an alcoholic in my family, and I'm not ready to admit to that. Well, break the family tradition, and you be the first one, man. You know, it isn't going to hurt one bit, you know. To say. But although there's just that small thing, little tiny character defects, see, these are just shortcomings. The book of books says, beware of the little foxes that gnaw at our vineyards because our vines have tender grapes. And you know, the alcoholics, grapes are so tender, they'll ferment at the slightest provocation. So I've got to watch that. Those little foxes. Remember, Nathaniel was a very small man. Very small man. This is a very short step. But you see, it carries with it great significance. And then we look at steps 8 and 9, you know, where we deal with amends. And we call this step James and John. They were known as the apostles of love. You know, it takes love when it comes down to dealing with amends. Well, you know, you say, well, you know, I will take so-and-so gift. I'm not going to say a word, you know. I'm just going to bluster on back like nothing has never happened. And I'll send the gift. Well, a gift is the apology for an amend that you were too small to make. A gift don't say nothing but tell you how big a coward that I am. I hide behind the gift because I'm not big enough to make an amend. And then we look at that 10th step where we continue to take personal inventory. And when we're wrong, promptly admit it. We call this step Judadian. Now, you know, you would think, because he brings us the message of steadfastness. See, Jude Thaddeus, his real name was Judas. But it has been shortened to Jude. Now, you would think with a name like that, he would say, well, oh, look how this other turkey act, I'm going to get out of this thing altogether. With a name like that, I can't make it. Why? Because it's too close to the one that did the betraying. You know, you always hear about, someone's always going to tell you about what an alcoholic did. Oh, I knew an alcoholic that did this or he did that. And in that organization, such a thing happened. Well, I might as well get out of that. Because what somebody else did, continue to take personal inventory, and when I'm wrong, promptly admit it, steadfast. In spite, because of, I remain steadfast. I don't care what some other alcoholic did. I don't care what somebody else did before or after. I will continue to take this personal inventory and remain steadfast. Because that's what this step gives me. It gives me the message of steadfastness. Now, we will look slightly away from the disciples and the apostles. And here is a man that wrote a beautiful message, Luke. He was not a disciple. He did not walk with our Lord. He was a writer. He was one of the four gospel writers. He did not walk. He was not born at that time. Luke was a physician, which tells me much. The 11th step, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. In other words, Luke being a physician and not walking with our Lord at the same time he was here, he went right to the source for his information. And this is what you and I do in the 11th step. We go right to the source, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. Praying only for the knowledge of whose will? Not John, not Sarah's, not Harry's, but praying only for the knowledge of his will for us. So that's what Luke did. He brings us that message of thoroughness, going to the very source for his information. This is what you and I do when we seek through the 11th step, prayer and meditation. Now remember, it says prayer and meditation, not prayer and medication. It says meditation, you know. So many times we may think, well, you know, through prayer and meditation, praying only for the knowledge of his will and the power to carry that out, the power. See, in the first step, I realized I didn't have any. In the second step, I realized that there was some. And from there on in, from 3 on in, I began to utilize what was there. Like little David, when he went out that day with his slingshot, and here stood this big bully up there raising more hell than a one-legged man at a dance, you know, one of those kind of things, Goliath up there. And David took his slingshot, you know. And you know, that day a giant got stoned, you know, and he hadn't had a drop to drink, but he got stoned right on, you know. But what happened? Was it the feeble force that David had behind that slingshot? It was the power behind that feeble force, which tells me every effort that I put forth, praying only for the knowledge of his will for me and the power to carry that out, if I will exercise this feeble force, there will be a power behind it that will see me through Now, we've got Andrew. Andrew never wrote a book, never wrote a gospel. Did none of those things. Andrew was one of those quiet people, constantly doing something, filled with determination, and he brings us that message of determination. Yeah. Having had a spiritual experience as a result of these steps, we try to carry the message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. We see people like that around us all the time, like him, like Eddie, like all the rest of them. Quiet, but busy. Bringing the message. This was Andrew. He was always busy doing something. But he was doing his... He made the first 12 steps. Because Andrew brought his brother Peter. But do you know who Andrew brought first? Andrew brought Andrew. You can't bring nothing nowhere until you bring you. You know? And here was Andrew. He had had a spiritual experience as a result of what he was doing. But he brought himself first. See? And with it, he brought a message. Although he never wrote a gospel. See? He never wrote... You will see no gospel according to St. Andrew. But he was there quiet. He was there busy. He was there carrying on. Like I've seen so many people today. Like I will always see so many people that love this program. Because they have found one thing. They have found the real message. And the real message is the same message that you and I received today that our divine Lord gave his disciples over 2,000 years ago. What was that message? What was the message? A new commandment that I give you. A new commandment that I give you. That you love one another. Why? How is he going to know us from anybody else? You see people around here with badges on that says host. Or you see people have badges on that says committee. Why? So you'll know who they are. That's why they got the badge on. So our divine Lord gives us that same message today. So that other people will know who we are. A new commandment that I give you that you love one another. And by that will all men know that you are my disciples. God bless you.
Got so carried away there, I forgot about the closing of this meeting. Holland, just beautiful. Our cups are full. May we close this meeting in the usual manner, please. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.